already introduced us on Gimel Amud Aleph. Now we're ready on Gimel Beis. It's a tushar by Mishloshta. So Mishloshta means that somebody owes me money or somebody owes me an item, and I want to transfer that money, I want to transfer that item to a third party. So I don't technically have the ability to do that unless they come up with some kind of a creative kinyan to do so. So Chachamim will misakein a new kinyan, a brand new magic kinyan called Maim Shloshim. Three of us get together in one room, and we just say, hocus pocus, that this item that used to be in Reuben Dushos should now be transferred to Shimon Dushos, and somehow it works. And the Gemara is trying to now figure out how exactly that works, when it works, what the parameters of this thing are. So let's pick it up in the Gimel Amud Beis, right in the middle of the page. The first one is Rabbanani. So Gufa, we learned above. Amar Huna Marav. Money libi yadcha. You have a money, you have X amount of item that belongs to me. Give it over to somebody else. We market it to the third party simply by us talking and standing in the same room together. Kona. So it works. So the Gemara puts the brakes on the Samarav, Mustava, Mosa, Dirav, Pikadon, above the Milva low. It was mentioned at the very end of the Shir on Monday that Rava thought that this statement of Rav only makes sense when we're dealing with a pikadon, we're dealing with an item that's been watched. So if I gave you something to watch on my behalf, so at least the item is here, something tangible to speak about. So then, even though we didn't make a real Maisa Kinyan, one could argue that the item transfers with shuns, which is words. Above a Milva low, Chavah. I lent you $1,000. The money's not here anymore. So there's this obligation floating around in cyberspace somewhere. So I'm going to transfer that chol to the third person. How's that going to work? But the Gemara says, nope, Elokim is a lashon shvu amarav, afilu b'milva. Nope, in reality, Rav said that the din works even by halva. In Manami, we learned, in fact, that is the case. Amar shvu amishre de levi, milva libi yad chotrelo, plod mamshashim chana. That Shmuel and Rav both held that this trick of Mishloshim works not only for a pikadon, but even for a milva, even though there's no kinyan that's done, there's no maisa that's done, there's no object that's here, it has all strikes against it, and it still works. So finally, Mari asked the question, the time am I? So why does this work? It's very nice to tell me, to prove to me that Rav and Shmuel hold that it works, but some kind of a rationale, how does this magic kinyan work? So Amra Meima. Meima came with a very, very creative idea. It's as if when I originally lent you the money, we made the following stipulation. You who borrowed the money agreed to become obligated to me. You accepted a shiba to me. And to everybody who will come because of me. Namely, when I lent you the money 10 years ago, you said to me, not really, nobody actually said this, but it's understood, it's self-evident, that you are willing to accept an obligation to pay me back the $1,000, as well as to anybody who I appoint as my recipient of that $1,000. So you will mekabel that shibud from day one. A person can be mekabel a shibud upon themselves. A person can obligate themselves to pay X amount of money. So that's what's happening here. So it's not really a kinyan. It's not that now I'm selling to somebody else the rights of this chov. I can't do that. There's no way, there's no mechanism to sell a chov. What's happening is that the original halva was stipulated in such a way that the lova, the borrower, will be chayev to anybody who comes machmas to malva. So I'm only Rav Ashi and Rebbe. So Rav Ashi asked the name of that's the case. El Beyata, Hikna l'no ladim to lo havu b'shas batat mos, achinami to lo kanu. What if 10 years later, I come to you, the loeb, and I say, listen, that $1,000 that I lent you, I want you to sell it. I want you to transfer ownership to somebody who was just born a couple of years ago. Now, why is that important? The person who was just born a few years ago wasn't alive when the original halva took place. So if you're telling me that my mishloshtan doesn't work now, my mishloshtan is simply just retelling what happened in the past, wait a second. How in the world can I sell something to somebody if they don't exist yet? If the person's not born yet, you can't sell something to an individual who doesn't exist. And the Gemara wants to prove that that is true. The Afil Rabbi Meir, the Amma Adam Machadavah Shlomo Liola, happens to be a machlokes, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, can I transfer ownership on an item that doesn't exist yet? Or people exist. I exist, you exist, hey, everyone is here, but the item in question is not here yet. It hasn't grown yet. So I come to you and I say, I want to sell to you next year's harvest, next year's produce. Or I say to you, I want to sell you a house that I'm going to buy in 3 years from now.
Really? It's a teachers mark.
Okay, okay. I guess that what says nothing you will be. So you fill in the gaps.
They started it.
Yeah, we started. Rebbe Meir started it. So Rebbe Meir says that Cain of the Machlad of a Shalom Aliyom, you can't sell somebody that doesn't exist. And the Rabbanan said, Lohayu Dvar Yom. You can't, literally, Lohayu Dvar Yom. It's not here. If it's not here, you can't sell what doesn't exist. There's actually a fascinating discussion that appears in the Ketos. This week, Pasha told us. But the Ketos says, you can't get more Misnagdish, more Litvish than this. The Ketos is the Kasha on Yaakov and Esav. How does Yaakov purchase the Bechorah from Esav? Esav didn't own it yet. Was it Dovah Shalom Aliyom? Most people, when they read Pesukim and Pashas told us, they read it with the drama, you know, the excitement. So it's like, So Ketos has a whole shul to explain what the mechanism of Chalois Kinyan was between Yaakov and Esau. So back to that story. So the Gemara says that even Rabbi Meir, because the Bechorah, the Bechorah means the rights to be able to be the Bechorah Pishnayim. But Yitzchak was still alive and well, so he didn't have the courage yet to sell it.
Who's going to pass
an Arpisa? That was all he wanted. Okay.
That's
Chassid Shatara. That's Chassid Shatara, the Litvish background. So comes the Gemara and says that even Rabbi Meir, who's the biggest maker, who says you can be Makna Dovash Lobalyom, Hani Mili, to learn to the man, the Gemara says, Hani Mili Dovash Yeshtalolam. Even Rabbi Meir, who says you could sell, what do you call the future, whatever it is, but you can't sell to somebody who doesn't exist yet. If the recipient isn't here yet, nobody says you could sell something to somebody that doesn't exist. So Amemar's whole idea that Kinyan Mamishloshdan was really a retelling of what happened B'Shas HaHalvah, that the original Lova was B'Shabed himself, he obligated himself to anybody in the future who the Malva is going to designate. That's not going to work. That's only going to work if that designated person was alive at the time of the original Hava. Elo Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi gives another attempt to explain the lumdus of this a very tricky kinyan mamishlosh. Ravashi says on the top of Yadal Manal, "Tahi hano the kamishtanyale ben milvi yishchanu milva chadasha gomu umishabed nafshei." The halacha is that I can be mishabed myself if I want to. If I want to obligate myself for something, and I'm willing to be mishabed myself if I gain something from the deal. Does the lova gain from the deal? So let's say I lent $1,000 to Reuven, and now I said, Reuven, 10 years later, I want you to transfer that debt. I don't want you to pay me anymore. I want you to pay somebody else. Does Reuven gain anything from that? So if Reuven gains from that deal, then he's probably willing to be mishabed himself to go through with that deal. If Reuven has nothing to gain from that deal, then he's not going to be mishabed himself. What could possibly Reuven have to pay? He has to pay the money anyway. He still owes the $1,000, whether he owes it to me or owes it to the next fellow. No, Ravashi says there's a big difference. Now, if he owes it to me, I've been pestering him for the last 10 years to pay back his debt. So he feels the pressure, the tension to pay back the debt. If the debt becomes transferred to a third party, he's the new kid on the block. He's not in such a rut. He just got the debt right now. I'll give him a little bit of a break. I'll give him some time. We'll wait to close to Shemitah. We'll write principles. He's not going to be under such intense pressure to pay it back. So says Rav Ashi, that hana'ah that the lover receives from having the debt transferred to somebody else, which gives him a little bit of breathing space, he's willing to be mishabed himself to the new person in lieu of that hana'ah. So Amalei Huna Mar Bereid Rav Nechemiah Rav Ashi. So Huna Mar, the son of Rav Nechemiah, asked Rav Ashi Elamayata. But that's not always true. Sometimes the lover would prefer the original malveh. Why is that? There were these tough guys. They were called the Beibar Ol Yashiv. So they remember they appeared in Cheskes about them also. They were tough in the third Bechel of Avos also. They didn't get any softer and give that $1. When somebody owed them money, they would go after you, all right. They didn't give you no time till the next Shemitah. They weren't dragging out. If you didn't pay them back, we believe it at that. They knew how to deal with their customers. So comes Huna Marbred of Rechem, etc. of Ashi. If you're telling me that my Mishloshdan is assuming that the Lov is happy about this new deal, and in lieu of the benefit that he's getting, he's willing to obligate himself to pay to the new fellow. What if the new fellow is a Barbe El Yashiv, who he's definitely not happy about? He would much rather owe the money to the original nice guy, the Shiva guy Ruven, who's going to give him another 10 years to pay back, rather than the tough guys of Bel Yashiv. Maybe that's the din. That Maimon Shlosh that only works if and when the Lova is happy with the new setup. That can't be. That then you set up a very, very strange halacha that was phrased Nasatan Varech L'Shiurim. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. You have to assess every single case. Is the Lova happy? Is the Lova not happy? Is the new Malva a tough guy? I mean, a sweet guy? It can't be. You can't have a din and din a moment that's based on that. So that idea of Rav Ashi that's based on the Hanas Alova is rejected as well. So we're 0 for 2. So we rejected Maimar's approach. We rejected Rav Ashi's approach. So what in the world is the reason for Maimon Shloshtan? Ela Amar Mazutra, Rav Zutra said the final reason for Maimon Shloshtan is as follows. Hanitlas Bile, there were three halachas, one of them being Maimon Shloshtan. We'll see the other two hopefully in a moment. Shavinu Rabbanan, Kehilchas Abelo Taima. That the Chachamim instituted these halachas like a halacha without a reason. What does that mean, halacha without a reason? So we should explain, we know exactly why they instituted Maimon Shloshtan. There was a very good reason why they instituted it. They instituted it just to make business a little bit easier. Sometimes you owe me money, I want to transfer that debt. It's a good system to have, it's a good tool to have to be able to easily transfer debt and objects through without requiring a formal legalities of my security. So why they did it, I understand. But the mechanism of how it works really doesn't make any sense. There is no real way to explain it. This just breaks all the rules of Kinyanim. There's no Maisa Kinyan, it's a double, it's not the end, you can't sell anyway. It doesn't meet any of the criteria, any of the regular rules of Maisa Kinyanim. But Chazal instituted it anyway. And we know that Chazal have the leeway to institute rules in the realm of Dina Mamunus based on Hefker based and Hefker. Basically, they can declare whatever they want in terms of Dina Mamunus. Usually when they do it through some legalities, they do it through some kind of a halachic mechanism. Here they said, forget the mechanism. We can't even think of a mechanism. There is no mechanism. It's a hilchos of lo taima. Taka doesn't make any sense. Not that it doesn't make sense why we did it. Of course it makes sense why we did it. But how it works, taka doesn't make any sense. It's a hilchos of lo taima. The Gemara goes on to say that there were two other of these takonas or chavim zedirim amnes that seem to be bizarre, seem to be so strange, they don't seem to fit the regular legalities of zedirim amnes. But Chazal understood that we have to make these takonas anyway. What were they? So chadaha, one of them is Maimon Shloshtan. The idach number of Yudah Mashmuel, Hakosev Kodachosev Ishto Lo Asa Ela Apotropia. If a person writes all of his property to his wife, for instance, everything that he owns to his wife, so she doesn't really own the property. It's obvious that he didn't really want to do that. He didn't want to literally give every last penny to his wife. What he meant is he wants his wife to be in charge. He wants his wife to take over, be the apotropos, to be the guardian, to be the one who's going to deal with all the business back and forth. But even though the lashon that he wrote in the shtar was a little bit misleading, it sounds like he's literally giving up full ownership on the property. It's most probably not what he meant. And therefore, we're going to normally when we follow what it says in the document, so here with the Rabbanan, we're going to assume that he probably didn't really mean that. So that's also a shtickle hilchos of lo taima. After all, the document says, you know, she's the owner of the property, and we're saying most people probably don't want to give all their property to their wives, that he should have nothing.
He's like passing away. He's like,
yeah, but usually the setup was this man Chazal. The setup was that the children would take over, that the wife would then be supported, etc. For the person to say that he's giving everything to the wife is very, very bizarre for somebody to do something like that. So therefore, Chazal understood that he probably didn't really mean it. The idach, what's the third? Yomer of Chananya. Hamasi Ishal of Nogoba Babai's Kana. If a person makes a wedding for his oldest son, he's so excited, he's marrying off his Bechor, he's marrying off his first son in his own home. So Reuven owns a big house, and he invites everyone to the wedding, and he has a big celebration. But then the son was just Kona the house. It's understood that the father, out of the excitement of the wedding, was going to transfer ownership to the son, and the father's out of the house. The Gemara explains.
Immediately? Or?
Yeah. Like the day of Sherebrach. Like, the son's a real nice guy. I'll tell the father, if you want a big splash, don't have to go get lost, to go rent the hotel room. So the Gemara explains that, obviously, the father is somewhere else to live. It doesn't mean that the father's going to sleep in the street. It means the father's in real estate. He has a lot of houses. So it's understood that there was like an umdudah that he probably meant to give this as a gift to his son. So again, there's also a hilchos of lo taima, like, what? Kinyan, where's the kinyan? Where's the document? Where's anything? There is no document. But the answer is that Chazal, every once in a while, made these hefker bays and hefkers because they thought this is probably what the person had in mind. So Amali Rav Rav Acha Bar Gula. So Rav mentioned something to Rav Acha Bar Gula. Kava de Marika Isli Gabach. I have rights to a certain amount of this this item of Marika, some kind of food or something, certain measure, Kav is a measure of this item. So he said, I have it in your house. And you own this thing that you have this thing that belongs to me. Yavi leploni biapei kamina lach lo hadrana bi. So let's do a kiddin my mitzvoshter on this item. So you're holding on, you're watching this item for me. Let's do a kiddin my mitzvoshter on it. We'll gather the three people together and we'll make a kiddin my mitzvoshter. That way, I won't back out from it. I won't be able to retract from this kinyan. So it sounds from the Lashon HaGemara a little bit that Rav said to him, I'll be embarrassed to back out. It won't be comfortable for me to back out because everyone's standing there. And then an hour later, I'm going to say I'm back out from it. So it sounds like Rav was not saying that he couldn't halachically back out. He's just saying that he personally wouldn't. Yes, the Gemara in the Lashon Mechlal, the boy, Hadabe, Matze Hadabe. Did Rav mean to say that he could theoretically back out? Is Rav undermining the Kenyan, the validity of the Kenyan of Mamishlashdan? Rav was the one who taught us the Kenyan of Mamishlashdan. So the Gemara says, no, we misunderstood the Lashon. Hachi Gamar. Rav didn't mean to say he personally wouldn't back out. Rav was teaching us halacha and saying, let's do a kiddin by mitzvoshtan that will prevent me from backing out. So yes, the Gemara, Abba Rav Chana said, we know this already. We need to tell a story about Rav and Rav Acha Bar Gula Baiselich with doing a kiddin by mitzvoshtan. We have well documented that Rav said, Amra Buna Marav, Manali Biyalcha Tnelo, play with my mitzvoshtan cup. We know that Mamet Shloshtan works. So that's the Gemara now. Imehi, if just based on the statement of Rav, Havamin, I would have said, Hanimin Matanim Meruba. That's if it's something which is really, really a lot. It's an expensive. It's a big loan. So I would think we need the real formality of all three people being in the room together for it to work. But Matan Muetes, a very small amount, like this little small measure of a vegetable or something, Loli by Befanah, maybe we could do a Mamet Shloshtan and a Mamet Shteham. We don't even need the third guy to be there. I could just say to you, listen, that little small item that you have in your house, that's mine, transfer to the third guy. The third guy doesn't even have to be there. So I would think that Mamet Shloshtan doesn't always require the presence of all three of them. Kamash Balan, it's called the Kinyan Mamet Shloshtan for a reason, that all three have to be there. So when all the dust settles, there is a Kinyan called Kinyan Mamet Shloshtan. It works for Pikadon, it works for Halvah. It doesn't have any real halachic mechanism to it, but that's the way it is. Chazal Misakeh, this halacha, and therefore the Rabbanon, the Kenyan is in fact still binding. Rambam says Kedusha has a fascinating discussion about whether you can use a Kenyan by Mishloshtan to do Mekadesh and Isha. Imagine the Chasam, the Kalb is standing under the Chuppah. So Kedusha asks the Chasam, where's the ring? Oh, yeah, I forgot the ring. I can't find the ring. If you have anything, I have nothing to Mekadesh and Isha with. But somebody owes me money. So I'm going to say to the Kalb, Harem Kedushasli, with Kenyan by Mishloshtan of the money that somebody owes me. Very, very beautiful, romantic giving of a ring. So the Gemara says that maybe should be Mekudeshes. So the Rishonim have Machlekes. How could she be Mekudeshes min HaTorah? The Kinyan by Mishloshtan doesn't really work min HaTorah. So some Rishonim say she's Mekudeshes min HaRabbanan. And others say, no, she's going to Mekudeshes min HaTorah. Oh, what does Shishayel about using a wild and vulgar Kinyan by Mishloshtan out of the realm of just simple video moments? So the problem is that my Mishloshtan works when not for me to sell my item and say, I have a jacket. I can't sell you a jacket with my Mishloshtan. If my jacket is a pikud by somebody else, then I can transfer it to the vehicle of my Mishloshtan. So how Ginoi? Agamah tells a story about there were these gardeners, they were involved in some kind of a business dealings, and they were trying to make a cheshbon at the end as to who had what in terms of money left. So one of them ended up with a little bit more than he was supposed to, that he was entitled to. So he was trying to get that money back to one of the other parties. So So he was trying to get the money that he had taken a little bit too much money from this deal. He was trying to get it back to the original owner of the land to clear this slate. So he tried two different ways of doing it. So first he tried to do it through Maimon Shloshtan. And number two, he did an actual kinyan. He did a real kinyan like a handkerchief, maybe a kinyan like we do under the chuppah or the chametz. He did a real bona fide kinyan. So Lesof, afterwards, Azal Abed Chushma, Ben Galil and Afshe, then he went to go check his books again, had his accountant to go over the numbers again, and he realized that Lo Pashke Bev Lamidin, the whole thing was a mistake. that Yitaka didn't really have any money extra. He didn't have any extra money that he owed somebody else. So the whole Kinyan and the whole Maimon Shlosh, everything was a toast. So also the Kamei Rav Nachman. So he came in front of Rav Nachman. They asked him, now what? So I went through this mechanism of Kinyanim. I actually went through two Kinyanim. I made a Kinyan Chalipin with a handkerchief. And I made a Kinyan Maimon Shlosh. Done. Now I realized that the whole thing was mistaken. So he came in front of Rav Nachman. So Amalei, my Abed Loch. So Rav Nachman said to him, he said, what do you want me to do for you? Chadad Yam Rav Huna Merav. First of all, there's a din of Maimon Shlosh that Rav Huna Merav told us. The Ode, HaKonam Yineich. So, and number two, you did more than Maimon Shlosh. You did a real Kenyan. So of course you have to give the money to the other person. So Rav Nachman wasn't told the facts of the story. Rav Nachman thought the fellow just wanted to back out from his Kenyanim. So Rav Nachman said, we didn't back out from Kenyanim. You made a Kenyan. It's legally binding. It's binding for two reasons. It's binding because it's Maimon Shlosh. It's binding because you did a Kenyan Chalipin. So what are you going to try that you want to back out from? So Amalei Rava, so Rava said to Rav Nachman, that no, Rebbe, Rava was a Talmud of Nachman, said, Rebbe, you didn't understand the case. Atu haimi ka Amalei Avina. Is this fellow saying that I don't want to go through with it? Is this fellow saying that I want to back out? No. The late Gaboy Kamar, what he meant to say was, is that he didn't have the money. It means the whole thing was a mistake. He never meant, he was calling to something that wasn't really, wasn't true. So Amalei Rav Nachman said, why don't you tell me that? And came Kini Betosu. So then it was a Kini that was done under mistaken assumptions. So Kinyan B'Tos Chayzer, if I do a Kinyan, by mistake, I thought that you owed me money, and then it turns out you don't owe me money. I thought I had the money, I didn't have the money. So those Kinyanim, nothing's binding, it's done by mistake. So therefore, the whole thing is null and void. But the bottom line is, if the Kinyan is done with correctly, if it's done under valid terms, then the Kinyan would have been Chal for two reasons, either because of Maimon Shlosh or because of the Kinyan Chalipin. But Kamash Blah, the end of the Gemara, that the whole thing was a Boslam of Wittel. So now the Gemara continues, Itmar, we learned the following. Holich mane leploni, shani chayev lo. I owe somebody money. I want to pay the person back, but I'm not traveling to their destination. So I ask a third party, I see, oh, you're on your way to China right now. Do me a favor. Take this money, take the $100 that I owe to the person, and you go ahead and bring it to the Malva. So Omer Rav said, chayev achu yourself. So first of all, what if something happens to that money on the way? So Rav says it's a very, very risky proposition because you weren't told by the Malva to send the money. If the Malva would have sent you a message, listen, send me the money with my agent, and once you give him the money, then you're relieved of your debt. That's one thing. Here, this is very, very tricky, very, very dangerous. I'm going to give $1,000 to this guy, and the guy's going to come and say that he got shipwrecked, he lost $1,000. The Malva's going to say, I'm so sorry to hear about your loss, but Tachlis never paid me back. So you should just know that if you give money under those circumstances, chayev achu yourself. So you as the lover, you as the borrower, are still obligated in responsibility for paying back the loan. But what if the lover, if they're giving the money to the third person, says, you know what, I just learned Kitten Daf Yadala, this is not such a good idea. Let me retract it. Give me the money back, and I'll find a safer way of transferring the money. Sorry, Rav says, you cannot back out anymore. Once you gave him the money, so now the recipient was Zocha on the money. The Malva is now was received, quote unquote, the money. So you have the worst of both worlds. So on the one hand, the Malva, it's a contradiction. That's one minute. So Rav seems to be saying what seems to be an internal contradiction. When I give money to a third party to bring it to the Malva, is the Malva acquire the money through that or not? So if the Malva acquires the money, so why am I still responsible for the money? If the Malva didn't acquire the money, so why can't I back out? So that's exactly what the Gemara is going to jump on Rav in a moment. Ushmuel Amash says no. Since the person has to pay back the loan still, he's still responsible for any loss that happens to the money along the way. Shmuel says that's a clear indication that the Malva did not yet acquire the loan back. So then the lawyer could back out. The lawyer could say to the third person, "No, wait a second. Maybe that's not such a good idea. Before you get on that boat, give me the money back. I'll send it through a little bit of a safer way." So Rav and Shmuel both agree that the person is chayav achrayus because the Malva never told him to send the money. So obviously, it's the lawyer's still responsibility. But whether or not that translates to mean that he can now back out or not, that was the point of contention between Rav and Shmuel. So comes the Gemara and says, "What are they arguing about? Lay him up to the floor. Maybe they're arguing about the following." The Mar Savar Holik Kizachi Dami, Umar Savar Holik Laf Kizachi Dami. This word holech is a very, very funny word. So holech can have multiple meanings. Holech can mean bring. Holech can mean almost like receive. There's a big difference. If I say to you, bring something to somebody, so that the other person wasn't zochan yet, if holech is lav kizochi, it doesn't have the connotation that you should acquire it for him, so then I can clearly back out. If you hold that holech means kizochi, holech has the dual meaning. It doesn't just mean to bring. It means you pick it up and accept it and acquire it on his behalf, so then I can no longer back out. So says the Gemara, maybe that was the machlokes. The Rav who said that you can't back out, because Rav said that holech is like zochi dami. Shmuel thought that the word holech doesn't have the connotation. I said, no. Well, the kuliyam holech is zochi dami. Everybody agrees that the word holech per se really does have that dual meaning of kizochi dami. And therefore, the money is now basically has been acquired by the malva. So what are they arguing about? That in terms of pure halacha, the malveh really was zoich the money. But lemaisa, the lova still is responsible. So that's what Shmuel said. You can't have that mix. You can't have that internal contradiction. You can't have your cake and eat it. You can't say that the malveh was zoich the money, but the lova is still responsible for the money. So therefore Shmuel said, I don't care what the word holich means. If at the end of the day the lova is still responsible, then the lova can back out. And Rav said, no, you can split between the two. That vis-a-vis backing out, the money belongs to the malveh. Vis-a-vis responsibility, it's still under the responsibility of the lover. So that's the mark who used the phrase migo, that because you're still responsible, therefore you can back out. Do you accept that svar now? So Henry thought that's a compelling svar. That's you jumped on Rav at the beginning. You were like Shmuel. And Rav said, we could split hairs. We could say that vis-a-vis one din, the malva was zoicha. Vis-a-vis another din, the malva was not zoicha. Says the Gemara, Tani Kavasei say the Rav. We have a braisa that actually supports Rav's theory. Holich man leplonish nechayvo. If I say to a third party, bring this money, bring this $1,000 to Ploni, then I'm chayv to pay him. Or if I say, tain man leplonish nechayvo. Or if I say, give it to him. Or if I say, holich man leplonish pikadosh leish to the yadi. In the first case, the braisa was talking about a loan. Now we're switching to a pikadon, to an item that's been watched. Or if I say, tain man leplonish pikadosh leish to the yadi. It doesn't matter what the lashon was. It doesn't matter whether it's a loan. It doesn't matter whether it's I am to be watched. It doesn't matter whether I use the word zocha. It doesn't matter whether I use the word dein. Under all these circumstances, the Brice concludes, chayev v'achar yuso. The loveh or the shomer is for sure chayev. There's no way in the world I'm going to get out of my responsibility without your permission. If I owe you money or I owe you your item and I didn't ask you, I decided on my own to send it through some third party, that's very nice, but that's not going to get me off the hook. Of course, I'm still chayiv until you grant me authority to do that. And the Brice concludes, but if the lover or the shomer wants to back out, he cannot back out. So that internal contradiction that Rav subscribed to is in fact correct. In fact, supported by the Tanoim, that vis-a-vis backing out, it's still, it belongs to the real owner. Vis-a-vis achrayus, it still belongs to the lover. So now the Gemara just asked the technical question. We're assuming that I have a pikadon of yours. I'm watching this item of yours, and I want to return the pikadon. So I give it to a third party, and boom, the minute that I give it to the third party, so that third party was zocha on the pikadon on behalf of the original owner. You can only be zocha on something if it's beneficial to the owner. Here, who says that the owner is happy with this third party walking around driving his car, walking around with his animal? He doesn't even know what third party is. So when it comes to pikadon, lemale, ain't ritzono shei pikadon b'arachit. That generally we assume that people don't want other people to drive their cars. People don't want other people to be watching the animals unless they were appointed to do so. So you're telling me that when the shomer returns the item through the third party, even though the original bialim don't know about it, the bialim in China, so the third party has been zocha on the item on behalf of the original owner, that's not a schus, that's not advantageous. That may actually be detrimental because people don't want the pikdonos to be in somebody else's property. So I'm Rabbi Zeira, kishuch sekafron. Sometimes people would prefer that the items be sent to a third party. When is that? If the shomer himself is not so honest. So here I gave an item for you to watch last year. I thought you were an honest guy and now I'm having trouble with you. I asked you what the item is. You tell me, yes, here, it's there, yeah, whole story. So my goal is to get it away from you as fast as possible. So I don't know about the honesty of the third party, but I know about the dishonesty of you. So therefore, it is considered to be advantageous. So the bottom line is that if we can clear the air and say that it's a schus, it's positive, it's to the original owner's advantage to receive his item back, so then we'll say that comfortably, and we'll say that in a chinami, that the original owner is zoch on it, and therefore the shomer can no longer back out. Just because he can't back out, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not chayv in achrayas. He is chayv in achrayas. It's a contradiction. You're right. It's a contradiction. It's not really a contradiction. It means we're playing it to he has the worst of both worlds. So the shomer is still responsible, yet the shomer cannot back out anymore. And that's ultimately the way we paskin based on the price. Provided that little small piece of information is correct, that the giving over the item was advantageous to the original owner. Okay, we'll stop here. Right, that's right. That's right. You know, that's what the base.